You are Locked On AFL, your daily AFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On AFL. I'm your host, Kane Pittman.
Particularly with a pathetic effort from Pitt. I mean, it was the most disgraceful display I've ever seen from a big fella. That's pretty hard on an individual, but he's going to have to live with that.
And alongside me, as always, is Josh Lloyd.
Lloyd.
Kane, thank. It's good to be here. Unlike Riley O'Brien, we are not throwing our phone against the wall and mistakenly tweeting out stuff. This is a bloke who's apparently broken his phone about 10 times, digging into his past tweets, which are a cavalcade of problematic incidences in the past from Riley O'Brien. So he can talk about having a mare, but there's a lot more troublesome stuff outside of just tweeting out the Nick Natanui game plan out there on his old Twitter account.
The only time I've ever seen someone's phone look like that was when my mate Jörg won a multi-bet that I think he won about $1,000 last year, and it was based on the Brownlow, and he needed five to win the Brownlow. And once it was confirmed that he won it, in celebration, he threw his phone on the ground. And actually, the screen just went fully green, and it looked like that. He didn't send out any accidental tweets, though. And I have to say, I'm pretty skeptical about this whole thing. Like, your screen's like that. I still don't think it transfers notes into Twitter and then sends tweet. I'm not sure what really happened, but an interesting story nonetheless. And I kind of feel bad for him because, let's be honest, I would say Nick Nat, even though he's probably not going to say anything about it, he'll be polite, but there's no doubt. I mean, the guy called him unfit and slow, was it? Is that what he said?
Lazy.
Unfit and slow or unfit and lazy? Pretty brutal stuff.
Yeah, Adelaide seems to have a problem with not knowing how phones work things accidentally deleting and tweeting out. There's a technology problem among other problems at the Adelaide Crows at the moment. But let's transition into some other stuff here. The team news has come out, of course, as always on a Thursday, and I was absolutely struck by the amount of blokes who are potentially playing their first game. Now, tonight's game, there's four guys: Will Day, Josh Morris for Hawthorn, Will Kelly, we talked about him already, and then Artu Bosanavalagi, and I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, I hope I did, but a couple of new blokes debuting there. There's Blake Akers for Fremantle. Fremantle fans have been looking for him for a while. Andrew McPherson in Adelaide. Isaac Rankin, amazingly, is ready to play his first game for the Suns. Who else have we got coming up? And then there's a few on the Sunday that have been named into the squad. Riley Collier-Dawkins for Richmond. Chad Warner and Dylan Stevens for Sydney. I believe both of those guys are playing. Callum Moore for Carlton, and Callum Porter and Jordan Sweet for the Bulldogs. So that is a number. Now, not all of them will play, but that is so many first-game players potentially putting on their team's jumpers.
Yeah, really interesting, because we're going to see maybe more of this in the next few weeks as well, particularly if they compress the fixture as they're talking about, and these 5-6 day breaks become more common, potentially even 4 day breaks. But it's going to be fun. Kind of funny to look at the Gold Coast Suns. I mean, we always looked at the Giants as the team that has this luxury and this plethora of young players coming through and stars. And now you say, well, they lost Matt Rowe. Huge blow, not only for the Suns, but for everyone who enjoys watching footy. And they say, well, okay, well, time to slot in Isaac Rankin. Let's go from here. And they bring in another really exciting prospect into the team. Nice time to be a Suns fan. Unfortunately, you lose Rowe, but now you have the excitement of catching Rankin on the weekend.
I remember watching Rankin in like a JLT game last year. I think it was against the Bulldogs. I don't remember what it was. And I was pretty excited by watching him play. And then, of course, we haven't seen him since. So it is good to see him getting back into action. Nat Fyfe is back. We thought, you know, hamstring, 2 to 3 weeks, but he's back after 1 week. It is a little risky. There was whispers of this during the week. He comes in along with Akers, Brennan Cox, and Travis Collier, while they suffered some injuries to Griffin Logue, who we talked about was playing pretty well. Jesse Hogan is injured, Reece Conker is injured, and Talon Duman is out as well. So what do you think about the Fyfe situation? Obviously, he is a key player. Interestingly, they won their only game when he wasn't there. Is this a little too early?
I mean, maybe, but we don't really know. I think that for a player of that caliber, I don't think you're taking any unnecessary risks, or I certainly would hope they aren't, particularly with the position that Fremantle are in this season. Of course, they do have a first-year coach, and maybe he's like, okay, we've got to win. This is a winnable game against the Saints. They're playing great footy, but maybe We've been settled up here in Queensland for a little while. Maybe we can pinch one here and get rolling. And adding five to the team clearly is a big bonus. The thing that concerns me, we've spoke a little bit about injuries. Syndesmosis was the one we spent all our time talking about. But the soft tissue injuries are going to be something to watch here. We saw last night with the Cats and Lions game, first 6 minutes of the game, two hamstrings, Quinton Narkle and Mitch Duncan. So I think that if I'm a Freo supporter, I'm looking at that game and I'm saying, oh boy, that's kind of scary to look at. We'll see. And the Cats coming up for 5-day break in that game. So that's also important to note when we talk about compressing the fixture. As I just mentioned, moving forward, soft tissue injuries, something to watch. Certainly for Fremantle, I mean, they don't want any setbacks with this guy. I mean, we talk about the season and where they're placed moving forward, but nonetheless, I mean, you want this guy out there. He's your best player, two-time Brownlow medal winner. You want him on the field at all times, and I certainly hope that he's 100% and they're not taking any risks.
Those hamstring injuries last night, both of those guys didn't look to be too seriously injured. Duncan was doing sprints along the boundary and potentially trying to get back in, but they are having scans today, so hopefully it is nothing major. Chris Scott said it wasn't the standard hammy. It just sort of a little bit of soreness, and they were just being extra cautious there. But you'd be pretty happy about last night, because early on, Lachie Neale kicked that goal, which I don't know what was more impressive, that the goal or the Zorko handball, which was unbelievable. And from then on, was it that that put the kiss of death onto the Lions, or was it Bruce continually saying how bad Ablett was playing?
Well, I'll get to Bruce in a second, but it's an interesting case study to look at this game. When you look at the Cats down two rotations right from, as I said, 6 minutes. I mean, these guys basically did not play at all. So two midfielders and two ball carriers, two ball users coming up against probably the form team of the competition in Brisbane. It clearly looked like they were pushing shit uphill. They get down 22 points, as you mentioned, and it was a team effort. There's no doubt about it. But there was one guy again, and I think if you learnt anything from this game, you understand how the Cats are able to hang on and continue to win games over these last few years, and maybe where the fall might come for them in the future is when Paddy Dangerfield isn't at his best. He just turned 30 in April, still got a couple of years of his prime, you would say, but my goodness, when he decides that, no, I'm going to the next level now, and I'm going to try and carry the guys over the line, it's something to behold. He was unbelievable from the midway point of that second quarter right through the game. The Cats ended up having the highest scoring quarter of the entire season, 7-3 in the third quarter. It was a scintillating period from them. And ultimately, you talk about the Lions, and I certainly have their contested ball winning, number one in the league for contested footy. They were really beaten around the contest badly from halfway through the second quarter. Yes, smashed, absolutely smashed. And that was where the game was won.
Yeah, so we saw, and I think it was a great illustration of Dangerfield's clearance work. It came late in the game, but I think it was in the center bounce, and he just ran through, put one hand up, grabbed the ball out of the stoppage. Just, it was such a weird motion, and it just happened like, oh, well, this is just what happens. It wasn't just him, though. How about Sam Simpson? We talked about him yesterday.
Yeah.
Comes in, leads the game in disposals. Oh, that was one out of nowhere. The big difference there, of course, the contested possessions was huge. The overall disposals was a massive discrepancy. But Brisbane, again, the kicking for goal and the overall field kicking, their disposal efficiency was well down. It was at 63% in this one, and they were 4-8 at halftime. And in that little run in the start of the second quarter where they were dominating, that could have been not 22 points. That could have been a 40-point, 45-point margin pretty comfortably with how many goals they were missing. And that, again, they were the beneficiaries of that last week. They kicked poorly against Adelaide. But then last week, Port Adelaide, similar start, 1-6 in that first quarter. Could have been a very different game. And then it's when you footy such a game of momentum and territory and possession. But when you've got the ball down there and you're just pinging away 12 shots to 7 in the first half and you don't convert even at 50%, once the other team gets a run on and then they convert, and Geelong went at what, 70% goal scoring efficiency in that third quarter, 7-3. So when that happens, then you're in real trouble.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're getting the sense of how important it is to take your opportunities and take advantage of that momentum. I actually thought in the first 5-10 minutes it was the Cats that were wasting opportunities in front of goal, and I was at that point having flashbacks back to that Port Adelaide game last week and thinking, Port Adelaide didn't take their chances against Brisbane and they're going to go on that blitz eventually. The second quarter, they threatened to do so. And as you sort of pointed to, they struggled with accuracy because it was the Cats across half back that they were sort of caught in two minds, I felt, watching this game. They were trying to slow it down because they were really going against the tide early in that second quarter. They weren't winning the footy. They were trying to possess the ball, and they continually turned the ball over at half back, and that was where the Lions were getting their opportunities from. And a lot of it felt unforced. And I think that's when the Cats were able to gain control of the game and get that momentum back. They started using the footy a little bit better. You pointed to Bruce McAvaney, and I kind of felt a little bit bad for him. I mean, I didn't think Ablett was playing all that bad. I thought he was among a group of Cats that had a couple of fumbles, a couple of skill errors. It certainly looked pretty slippery. But the second Bruce, repeatedly said that Ablett was struggling, he really turned it on. And along with Dangerfield and a few other guys, helped the Cats turn the game. Two guys, before we move on, that I did want to point to, Cam Guthrie and Sam Manigola. Both Guthrie at 22 possessions, Manigola 26. Both are having fantastic seasons. They're both moving into the midfield a little bit more, and this is the benefit we're seeing for the Cats being able to play Ablett as as more of a permanent forward. Last night, he was forced to play up the ground a little bit more with the lack of rotations, but Manigola and Guthrie, two guys using the ball on the season 75% plus. They're contested ball winners, and then they can get on the outside and really burst open with that skill use, with that ball use by hand and foot. So Manigola and Guthrie. Guthrie only 27, Manigola only 28. We know Manigola was late to the game after being knocked back, having a couple of opportunities at AFL clubs and not finding his footing. He's having a fantastic year. And they're two guys that are actually in their prime from that midfield group of the Cats that we know is aging.
Yeah, I thought Manigola was pretty good. On the Brisbane side of things, McCluggage suffered a shoulder injury, came back on and then didn't look quite right, so that'll be one to watch. Then Mitch Robinson had that leg issue. It doesn't appear to be anything too serious, but we talked about Daniel Rich in the lead-up to this game. Some of his kicks were great, but he still only went at 67%, gained 454 metres, more than anybody on the team. But I didn't think he was quite as influential as he had been in prior weeks, and I guess that still happens when you end up losing and having such a poor second half. But this is a name that we needed to touch on. And Dane Zorko looked really, really good in his return. I talked about that handball already. But we've talked about this enough. Now, Kane, you've got a very special segment for us here on Locked On AFL.
Yeah, it's the first time we've done something like this through the week. As I think most of the listeners maybe know or don't know, I've been doing some writing over at ESPN, so I've had the opportunity to talk to some players each week. And this week, I was fortunate enough to get some time with Dan Butler from the Saints, arguably the recruit of the season, I would say. I mean, he's been in fantastic form with the Saints, and they're in the top four right now, as we said earlier, taking on Fremantle this week. Butler missed out on the opportunity to play in the grand final last year and saw his opportunity start to dwindle, found his way to the Saints and has been able to respond. So we spoke about his time with the Tigers, the difficulty last season, and of course now the way he's been able to transition to St Kilda and play some good footy. So we'll jump straight into the conversation here. Something different. If it's something that people enjoy, we can look to certainly do a little bit more of this moving forward. But let's jump into the convo with Dan.
When you go from 23 in a flag to 15 games, then to 7 games, last year in particular, what was the personal challenge for you in from week to week, whether it's mentally or physically, just struggling to find that consistency getting in the team?
Yeah, obviously, 2018 I was cut short by injury, and then 2019 started off in the ones, and probably didn't get going and, you know, got dropped. And then from there on, I was kind of in and out of the side. I think I got dropped 3 times and, I was emergency a handful of other times. So, yeah, obviously it was pretty hard to find that consistency when you're kind of back and forth between two teams in the AFL and VFL. But for me, like, the main thing was just, you know, not to drop my head and keep buying into the program back then. And, just keep playing good footy, because I knew that, anything could happen towards the end of the year, but obviously it wasn't meant to be. But, I was obviously fortunate enough to find myself land at the Saints, and, just really kind of tried to enjoy my footy over the pre-season and the first part of the year, and, I'm loving playing with the boys, and we're playing some pretty good footy, so it's been really fun to be a part of.
Yeah, were you able, I mean, you spoke about that, trying to keep your head up. Were you able to do that now when you look back? Because, you know, clearly the team's winning. You've been a part of that before and been a part of a flag. So as it got closer to that moment, did it become more difficult for you to do that?
Yeah, definitely. It was obviously, there was different parts of last year that was obviously pretty tough. But, yeah, I think looking back, I probably handled it as best as I could. I was living with two of the other boys, Jaden Short and Liam Baker at the time, who obviously Shorty played 16 games in 2017 and missed out on the flag. So, you know, I just tried to celebrate them. Because obviously, yeah, didn't play in 2017, and I was just so happy for them that they got to, you know, play in 2019, and yeah, couldn't have been happier for them. So I tried to, you know, focus on other people rather than, you know, being selfish and focusing on, yeah, what I was missing out on.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Because I wanted to ask you about that. So you play the VFL Grand Final, obviously, the week before. You're in the mix, and you're sort of named as a guy that's in the mix through Grand Final week to possibly play. I mean, what point did you know that you weren't? And then how was that feeling being there, knowing what it feels like to play that game? I know you said you're happy for the other guys, but if you think about your own, I guess, selfishness for those few days.
Yeah, well, it was probably a couple of days before the VFL Grand Final. I knew I probably wasn't going to play because they held two other blokes out as emergencies for the Grand Final. So I kind of had a good sense then that unless there was 10 injuries in the AFL that weekend, I probably wouldn't be playing in the AFL in the Grand Final. So, yeah, I just kind of tried to soak it up, the VFL Grand Final, and I probably knew it was going to be my last game for Richmond, and so I just tried to enjoy that. But yeah, the week leading into the Grand Final, you know, Dimmer from 2017 always spoke about just enjoying it, because you never know when you'll be in that position again. And yeah, obviously I wanted to be playing, and it was tough to watch, but yeah, there was a few of us, me, Jack Graham, Alex Rance, that, you know, watched from the sidelines and had all been there in 2017. Obviously, it was a bit tough, but at the end of the day, we're a big team, 44 of us, going for one goal. So, couldn't have been happy for the boys, and yeah.
Obviously, for you, at that point, you're just desperate to play AFL, and even though the other guys are winning, you want to be out in the field. So, you said that you thought it would probably be your last game for Richmond. I mean, when did those thoughts start to come in, purely from an opportunity point of view, and you thought maybe your best bet was to head elsewhere?
Yeah, it's probably halfway through the year of last year, I kind of knew that I was a little bit out of favour, and when you're getting dropped three times, it kind of shows that maybe you're not in the best 22, and there might be opportunity to look elsewhere. So yeah, kind of probably halfway through last year, I was kind of aware that I was out of contract and I might have to, start looking around to make sure I had a club to be at the following year.
All right, let's get on to the Saints stuff. Let's get to the good stuff. You were, but I want to go to the trade day first of all. So I think you were away. Did I read that you were away during those few days? How did that all play out? I mean, how active are you in terms of talking to your agent, talking to other teams? I mean, what's the last few days look like? Because it was really last minute.
Yeah, so couldn't have worked out any worse. But pretty much the whole of trade week, I was on footy trip and then to Bali. So I was kind of had to be on my phone a fair bit. I was pretty much chatting to my manager every day. I kind of knew, well, I had a fair indication that Saints, that I was going to go to the Saints, but it probably wasn't. I was getting told that, yep, it would happen tomorrow, and then it would get pushed back the next day. And then it came down to the last day trade period, and I was in Bali with a few of the Tigers boys, and they said, yep, it'll be done by lunchtime. And then it gets to 5 o'clock at night, and still hasn't been done. And I'm thinking, geez, I don't know what's going to happen here. And then finally came down to the last, 5 minutes. When finally the trade came through, I was kind of refreshing my Twitter feed and saw it pop up, so I knew it was confirmed then. And yeah, it was a relief in the end because I was a bit worried it wasn't going to get done.
Yeah, that's crazy to think of you being on Twitter looking at it that way. But you said relief. But what about? I mean, how quickly does it go from relief to all of a sudden you're like, okay, now I'm with the Saints? Is it motivation? I mean, what are the 24, 48 hours after that? Realizing you're going from a club you've been at for a while.
Yeah, it was obviously, it switches to joy pretty quick, just knowing that, I'm going to get another crack at playing AFL, and, definitely a lot of motivation involved as well. Just, obviously, from then on, had to kind of look at relocating and, yeah, just kind of moving down south side, which I'd never really experienced before, and going to the club and seeing all these new facilities, meeting new teammates. So, yeah, you obviously want to come in make a good first impression, and that's what I, you know, pretty much tried to do over the pre-season and the off-season when I was training together.
Yeah, so I mean, you did have a full pre-season, but then I guess it's been such a weird time after only getting sort of one game in. So how has the connection been, I guess? How is your relationship with Rats and Lade and the other coaching staff, and how have you been able to fit in such a strange, sort of unprecedented year?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, you know, it was good to, at least we had, you know, 3-4 months of pre-season just to kind of build all that connection. And then from then on, it was, yeah, it was a lot of obviously virtual meetings and catch-ups and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was difficult to kind of keep that connection. But, you know, we just tried to keep in touch with our forward line group and then obviously your other mates as well that you kind of text a bit, see how they're going. I went back to Ballarat, my parents, and a lot of my mates went back into state as well. So, yeah, we just tried to, you know, keep in touch by text, and that was all we could pretty much do until we got back to the club. So, yeah, I think we're in a pretty good spot at the minute, and this kind of hub we're in at the moment can only enhance our connection going forward.
Yeah, the way you guys are playing in terms of attacking footy, lots of good ball users, it's pretty damn entertaining to watch, and it seems to really suit you down to the ground in terms of you sort of moving up the ground and being able to run back the other way and find open space. I mean, what's contributing to your form right now? Because arguably, I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but it seems like it might be the best footy you've played.
Yeah, I think, it just kind of helps with that, you know, having that consistency. And obviously there was a bit of a break with the COVID period, but I suppose I tried to train pretty hard and probably gave me a good perspective on, footy at the end of the day, it's just a game, and, you know, we play it when we're kids to have fun. And I just, from then on, just kind of thought I just wanted to enjoy my footy and enjoy being out there with the boys. And I guess it's just translated to having fun on field and playing good footy.
The Richmond game, best on ground. What was your thoughts before that? Because I don't know what type of guy you are, whether you have a sort of a chip on your shoulder, motivated, nervous. I mean, what was the feelings before that, and how enjoyable was that to play so well and beat them?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. as soon as the fixture came out, I had that one marked in for a while. So yeah, I was. Obviously, there's no bad blood between me and Richmond. Obviously, you know, getting traded, it's just a part of footy. So, still got a lot of great mates there, and a lot of my mates are in the back line at Richmond as well. So, I knew I was going to be playing on some ex-house mates. So, I just wanted to go out there and, yeah, have a bit of fun and give a bit of banter to the boys. So, it was, pretty fun out there and, yeah, something I'll remember for a while.
You spoke about the hub that you're up there and you seem pretty positive about it. I mean, clearly everyone's situation is different, but how do you think you guys are going to go with this, and is it an opportunity, as you sort of said, to build on what you've been able to do so far?
Yeah, for sure. I think the boys have embraced it pretty well, as I'm sure all AFL clubs will, but we just kind of spoke about enjoying your time up here while we're away, and, it's such a bizarre circumstance that we'll probably never find ourselves in again, so just to enjoy it for what it is, just kind of grow that connection with blokes you haven't been as close with over the last few months or whatever. But yeah, pretty much the main message is just to enjoy ourselves and just play good footy as well.
So the last one really here, I mean, you guys obviously right up there around the top four at the moment, probably playing the best footy the club's played in a while. I mean, what's the ceiling for you guys? I mean, when you talk amongst yourselves, where's the confidence level, and do you put a ceiling on what you can achieve? Because it does seem like one of those strange seasons where really anything could happen.
Yeah, we've just spoken about this year that with such bizarre circumstances, it can be anyone's game. So if you're off by 5-10%, teams can jump you, and we've seen that in some of the results where some of the lower teams are beating the top teams. And we just spoke about who knows what can happen this year and what the future holds for us. But we're just trying to play exciting footy and play to our strengths, and we don't really know where that's going to take us this year, but we think we play good enough brand of footy that we can definitely match it with the best.
Beauty, mate. Really appreciate the time.
Beautiful. Thanks for that.
No worries at all. Take it easy.
Cheers, everyone.
See you, mate.
So a pretty interesting chat, I thought, with Dan. Josh, he was pretty open. I think about his situation in Richmond, how difficult it was for him, and also the fact that the Richmond club has been able to foster this, environment of unselfishness and still trying to do the right thing by the team. Certainly the thing that stood out for me was him saying, you know, halfway through last year, he knew that things, the writing was potentially on the wall for him. But overall, a pretty fascinating conversation, I thought.
Yeah, it was good to bring that onto the show, and we'll see how that goes. And let us know, and we'll see what else we can do in terms of getting these sort of mini interviews happening on the program. Now, what do we want to look for this weekend? The thing I really want to look for here, Kane, is Melbourne and Gold Coast. There's two things I want to look at here. Rankin, I want to see how he looks in his first game, how they look without Rao, how they set up, because there's always a difference between replacing a player in-game and then when you've had a week to know that he's not there and how you make adjustments, because it's not always the same way. We saw Anderson really step up last week. Yeah, how much more responsibility is going to come on to Greenwood and Tuk Miller in the middle there for Gold Coast? Yeah, is Rankin going to spend any time in the midfield? Is he going to stay up forward the whole time? I want to see how Gold Coast responds, because after that somewhat disappointing performance, disappointing in terms of getting a loss against Geelong, but I thought competitive-wise it was good. This is against a team who's on the real back foot, Melbourne. They need to get this win, even without Rao, to show that they can be a team that wants to challenge for the finals. Whereas Melbourne, everyone's been piling shit on them all week. Former club legends, media analysts, two dickheads with a podcast here talking about how badly Melbourne's been going. So I want to see what Melbourne can do. The pressure is on to see their kicking skills, their decision-making. The tempo of their game has been something that's been criticised quite a bit this season. They do bring back Harley Bernal. They do bring back Sam Wiedemann, whom we talked about, that lack of that forward option. So is that going to be the change? Neville Jetta returns. And then Jaden Hunt and Joel Smith, who had some real troubles last week, have been omitted. Adam Tomlinson's and Trent Rivers is out as well. So they've whittled the axe. They brought in some names to give them a little bit more in terms of kicking skill with Bennell and Jetta there, and see what Wiedemann can do up forward. So from both sides of this, it's a game which, again, we're not talking about the... It's not your game of the year type of scenario, but there's a lot of interest for me into how this one pans out.
Yeah, well, Melbourne needs to stand up, don't they? I mean, as you said, I mean, they've been blasted from all corners all week. So it's going to say a little bit about them. It's at Giant Stadium, neutral site, again, as many of these games are. Wiedemann's the big one for me, because we spoke a couple of days ago about the fact that when you go back to that 2018 season, it was Tom McDonald and Hogan. 100 goals between them. They both had fantastic seasons as that two-pronged attack. McDonald, there's no question, was the second option up forward behind Hogan. He struggled in since Hogan left, being that main man. And Sam Wiedemann was someone that's shown a fair bit as a young sort of key position prospect, a marking target up forward. So I think McDonald will benefit from him coming back into the team. We'll see whether he can take that opportunity. A couple of games for me that I wanted to touch on quickly. The first one is Port Adelaide and GWS. Now, Port last week, at the time, undefeated, doing such a great job in the hub, playing fantastic football. They ran into the buzzsaw of the Lions, particularly in the second quarter there. But I'm looking for them, for their older guys, to really step up here, because last week they were beaten around the footy. They've been so strong all season, the veteran core, and I'm talking about Boak was fantastic last week, to be fair, but at Rockcliffe, Ollie Wines, Brad Ebert, Hamish Hartlett, they need to get back to the form, because while the young guys are providing the dash, providing the run, it's been the clearance work, the contested work of that veteran midfield core that has really carried the power. So they're 1 week away from getting out of Queensland for them. The opportunity is here for Port Adelaide to pick up one more win against a Giants team that efficiency inside 50. I spoke about this last week, that it was right off the charts in terms of forward 50 entries, translating them into scoring opportunities. Last week against Hawthorn, they only had 26 forward 50 entries for 18 scoring shots. That's 69%. That's pretty nice, Josh, 69%. And it's incredible. I mean, you watch this team. I mean, 26 forward 50 entries, it's hard to imagine that that would be enough to produce a winning score. But this team, with Finlayson up there, Himmelberg, Cameron, Toby Green, they are just lethal. If they get an entry inside 50, it's hard work to stop them scoring. And, you know, we talk about form teams. I mean, they're really starting to get rolling now.
That 69% scoring efficiency inside 50 is the best that we've seen in the last three seasons. So that just shows how that... I think it's one of the top 10 inside 50 efficiency games ever, but don't quote me on that one. But it is the best one in the last three seasons. So that is really, really interesting to see how that looks. And I think that there's a lot of pressure on Port here because GWS, you know, really, really rolled Hawthorn last week. So that'll be interesting. And then the other game you want to look at is Richmond and Sydney with all those injuries and... whole bunch of surnames in the Richmond Inns this week.
My goodness, when you look at the team lineup, it's incredible to look at the names that have come in. But the outs, this is all about Richmond. I mean, we know they've been able to withstand guys out of the team in years gone by. But Vasihuli, Dion Prestia, Shane Edwards, Toby Nankervis, Trent Cotchin, and Tom Lynch probably not going to play either. I mean, that is six primetime players for Richmond. And you talk about the Inns, Callum Coleman-Jones, Derek Moisey Smith, I think that's how you say it. Yvonne Soldo, Jack Graham, Jack Ross, Marlon Pickett, Riley Collar, Dawkins, Ryan Garthwaite, Shai Bolton. That is a lot of ins. That is a lot of changes to this team. How do they withstand that? I'm not sure.
I need to check with Swampy to see whether that's the most hyphenated surnames ever in an ins. It's three hyphenated surnames in that ins, which just makes the list look even longer in terms of how many players are coming in. But there's obviously a ton of guys there, and replacing those six players is going to be tough. The Swans again, a couple of new guys, Warner and Stevens, coming in there with Ronk and Malakin injured. Richmond absolutely needs to win this one. They've got a massive chance, but it's going to be tough. And I think that if they can get this one, it keeps them at least afloat. But losing this one would make you be really, really pessimistic about how things go the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, I'm not even going to talk about any stats with this game, and that's something that we normally do. It's pretty unusual for us to go this route, but I really just want to see how they respond. I mean, how do you go with six premiership players going out of the team? And two guys in particular I'm looking at, Marlon Pickett and Shai Bolton, we don't know whether they're going to play, but two guys that have been dropped, two guys that have been important players. Well, I mean, Marlon Pickett, grand final day. However you want to talk about that, he hasn't been around long enough. But two guys that played in that grand final side have been dropped early in the season. They were expected to be key players for this team. Let's see if they respond. Let's see how they respond to that. So, yeah, Richmond, just fascinating. We know they've been probably more outspoken than any other team in regards to not necessarily being happy about being in the hub and the difficult situations with family and that. So how do they can they get together and respond from that, or does this really weigh them down?
Yeah, that is. There's so much, as always, in the footy to watch this week, but that is one of the big ones for us to pay attention to. That'll do it for us today, Kane. And another week in the books of Locked On AFL. Lots of footy to watch tonight and across the weekend. Lots of stories. There's going to be lots of things for us to talk about next week. And again, let us know what you thought of introducing that Dan Butler interview into the show, and we'll see what we can do about getting more of them if it is something that you guys like. Kane, thank you again for another great week.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to a good weekend of footy. Hopefully everyone stays safe. And one last hat tip to the last game of the week. We didn't speak about it, but Cripps versus Bont. Can't wait for that one.
Yeah, that is. I'm obviously going to be very, very, very glued to the screen for that one, and hopefully the Dogs can get their fourth win in a row. Guys, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And I'm going to leave you today with a shout-out to Sean White.